you hear me? Has anybody tried to see if a VRML browser works? You have access to such a browser? Well, if nobody complains, we'll assume you do. It's not... All right, so... well, you just got given out the start of the notes on VRML2. They're not complete yet, but I haven't given you out. They may be complete, but I haven't given you all of them. So I'm going to continue. Going through these VRML1 parts of these VRML1 notes, and you. I believe you will go, if you go to the class page, you should see the notes for VRML1 and VRML2, and also the resources for VRML1 and VRML2, and I suggest that you you look at the, I think the best way to learn this is to just look at the examples. So I suggest you study those. These examples here, in which are VRML1, will be available over the weekend in VRML2. So you can look at them in both 1 and 2. So that's the pyramid and the car. And there is a wonderful set of resources for VRML2 available. All right. So you may remember that a VRML node has this general structure of, you can give it a name with a def command. There are these canonical node types. Each node type has a set of canonical fields. And then inside the curly brackets, which specify a node, you can also specify children nodes. In VRML2, you have to explicitly write the word children. In VRML1, you did not. Now I'm going to go to... All right, so I want to discuss the pyramid, mainly because it tells you how to do an indexed face set, which is the general way of building an arbitrary... object. So we will see if the VRML viewer works from here. Yes. Alright, so you should be, as you see, you can get to this pyramid from the foils. So this is this basic white pyramid. This pyramid has various versions, but I'm not going to look at all the versions. The basic version specifies that the pyramid has a material node, which is also present in VRML2. The material node specifies the properties of the of the pyramid, and in particular, it has these color fields which specify how it's going to look, and these are specified in RGB notation, and RGB are all equal to 1. That corresponds to white, and so it has a diffuse white color, and the ambient color specifies how much it glows, which it doesn't do very much. So I am not a great expert on computer graphics. So you will find all these nifty types of colors, and exactly what they mean, I'm afraid I'm not an expert on. You can, of course, find out experimentally and go to your favorite class on computer graphics. So it's also true that VRML does not implement the most faithful computer graphics method, which is something like ray tracing, because that is far too expensive on any real machine. So there's some approximations in the rendering and lighting model for VRML, which are described in great detail. Particularly, say, the VRML2 document has a long section defining exactly how you're meant to render, produce the picture from the VRML definitions. So, but for the basic, drawing basic pictures, that's it's not terribly important. So you specify separately the appearance, which is here done with the material node, and the geometry. You shouldn't worry about this so-called separator node, because separator has disappeared in 2.0, but it's replaced by a transform node, or I think you can also use a group node in VRML2. And there's this funny words here saying it performs a push of the traversal state before going through its children and a pop after traversing them. So what that means is that's whenever you get to a group node, which effectively defines some curly brackets, when you arrive at the beginning of the curly brackets, there's a giant rotation matrix. I mentioned these 4x4 rotation matrices. So what VRML does is it gets to that rotation matrix. It applies that rotation matrix to everything inside the curly brackets when it ends, and then applies also further transformations inside the curly brackets. When it ends the curly brackets, it restores the rotation matrix to what it was at the beginning of that group node. So this effectively says we have a hierarchical model. Say the details of the separator node are not important, as they're superseded in VRML 2.0. So we won't go into that. So this is more interesting, because this is essentially unchanged in VRML 1.0. So we want to specify a pyramid or a general shape. In order to do that, we need a bunch of points. So the first thing we have is a node which defines points, and so the coordinate free node, which as it says here is replaced by coordinate in VRML 2.0, the coordinate free node has a field called point, and it just defines an array of three-dimensional points. So it says point 0 has x of 0, y of 5, z of 0, point 1 is -2.5 of x, y of 0, z of -2.5, and so on. So this defines a square lying on the plane y equals naught, and then a point out of the plane, which is going to be the top of the pyramid, which lies, if you project it, in the middle of the square. So we define 5 points, and obviously we define any number of points, and VRML, of course, I guess not surprisingly, starts numbering at 0, not at 1. So when we need to use these points, we'll call them 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So we have a bunch of points. So now we want to define a pyramid, and we're going to use it by using indirection into that array of points. So we have a VRML node called index face set, and it's called index face set because we're going to find the faces of our object using indices. And so index face set has actually a lot of fields, but the one that we'll use here, which is the same in VRML1 and VRML2, is called coord index. And it notice coord index starts with a square bracket. That's because coord index is an array of numbers, and anything which is an array is separated by square brackets. Curly brackets separate field how you define the contents of a field or a node. So coord index in this case is there's 0, 3, minus 1, 0, 3, 2, minus 1, and so on, up to 1, 2, 3, minus 1. And so coord index is just a stream of numbers where the positive integers are just the indices into that point array, which we had in the coord node, and the minus 1 specifies the end of the definition of a fundamental face. So we're assuming that we're building our system out of triangles, and so a pyramid is built out of 6 triangles. So 0, 4, 3 is 0, 4, 3 is a triangle. Minus 1 says that's the end of that face. Otherwise, if we didn't have the minus 1 and just said 0, 4, 3, 0, 3, 2, it will build a polygon out of 6 points, which is not what you want. So it'll build a hexagon. So here we're assuming that we're building our system out of triangles. In general, computer graphics, I think, can have arbitrary shapes. Whether a particular browser, usually you use triangles, they're the easiest to render from. And so I believe it is safest to build them out of triangles. Whether a particular browser does well for more general shapes remains to be seen. So the next, after 0, 4, 3, we do 0, 3, 2, which is this back face here, 0, 2, 1, and so on, and then we divide the bottom into 2 triangles, even though it's a square. We could, in principle, have said for the bottom, 1, 2, 3, 4, minus 1. If we thought our browser rendered quadrilaterals okay, we could have specified 4 points. And I think browsers are expected to render quadrilaterals, probably. But probably by breaking them up into triangles, actually. So we specified 6 triangles. All this file here is basically quantifies that discussion. And again, we don't particularly want to discuss these things here, which are per part and per face, which are the so-called bindings, because those have changed in VRML2. So we only want to look at the first few bullets, which just tell you what we just illustrated, which is the coord index field. We'll illustrate a little later on texture maps, which is essentially unchanged in VRML2, and that allows us to put general images on top of our objects. So we're allowed to have not only a coordinate index pointing to points, we can also point to positions in a texture map and so lay an image on top of our object. All right, so I think I might as well... So the way these foils work, if you go to the resource and actually look at the VRML that it defines the pyramids, or later on the car, the way these foils are designed. They're just meant to discuss the various nodes that are used in the that are used in that VRML. So there was a node which was called www anchor in VRML 1. It is now called anchor. The critical field in www anchor is called name here. It's called URL in VRML 2, but has the same central role of just giving a URL. And so if you have an anchor node, what it does is it does a clickable 3D object. So if you click on something, it should give you the it will then access this particular URL, which can either be it can be anything legal. Let's see if what that illustrates. So it is believed to be true that if you click on that, this foil might actually be wrong, because when you click on that, I think the name should say, I think actually when you click, you do not get an HTML file, you get a VRML file. So if we go back to, let's actually close that one. So let's just see what we did there again. So this is pretty generally useful. So here we have a VRML thing with I guess for some reason we've lost this particular pyramid here, but there were 8 pyramids. One of them was one of them somehow got rendered in gray. It is actually there on this screen. And so when we click on clickable. So when we get that, we load a new VRML file, which is a larger version of that small pyramid. So that allows us to have 8 small pyramids, and which then, when we click on them, give us an appropriate. You see, this was really. So that was really that multicolored pyramid. So this allows you to build beautiful world where you click on one part of the world, you either get an HTML file or you get a VRML file, or actually any legal web link. It just invokes that web image. All right, so we should probably delete that thing, whilst the poor old computer will spend its time rotating that image. So actually, I don't think this, but I think this thing called name here should end in .wrl, but I'll double check that. Alright, so that's the end of anchor, so anchor's pretty useful. So this just there's a difference between anchor and inline. Inline is just a way of if you have a lot of VRML, you don't want to put it all in one file. So inline effectively allows you to first, like an image tag in HTML, and an image tag references another URL which you fetch in to your page. Inline accesses another VRML file which you can just fetch into your global file. So you can build out your giant, if you have your favorite chair stored in a particular file, you can inline that and access it with an inline node, which will then just essentially pull that VRML in. So that's different from anchor. Anchor, you click on and then you do what you build up, bring in general a different window, which well, a different or the same window depending on what type of image, type of web resource it is. So anchor is a clickable image, and inline is an image tag which just incorporates another file into the HTML, in this case into the VRML. And in both cases, the major difference between VRML 1 and VRML 2 is you remove www in VRML 2, and you, instead of name, you write URL, which is actually easier thing to easier thing to remember anyway. I don't think there's anything. So these next few files, just to find precisely the anchor on the inline node, I don't believe we need to do that. So next one I want to look at is foil 51. If you're following on your printed copy. So this file here, you see, we've now replaced that, now we come back to our car, which we saw before. So we showed this last time, and probably we should switch on a headlight or something like that somewhere. Where's the headlight? Who knows where the headlight is? One of these buttons will switch on a headlight and we can see it. This is our car, and the last part of these VRML1 foils just go through the node types needed to build the car. So my suggestion is you just go to the resource, print out the VRML, which I say on Saturday or Sunday will be available in version 2 as well as version 1, and we'll put the corresponding URL up for the VRML2 version. And then you can study that VRML, and also, as I said, there's a lot of other such tutorial material available. All right. So, all right. So these files then just go through the various nodes. The first of which is a transform node, which is says that we're going to define our car, but then the default view is going to be rotated by 30 degrees about the x-axis. It's 30 degrees because it says rotation 100.52, so 0.52 is pi by 6, which hopefully is 30 degrees in radians, and so that's. So remember, the rotation field specifies an axis, which is here the x-axis, and a rotation angle in radians. So this gives you a default viewing, which you can actually then change. Remember what the actual browser commands. Then you set some default lighting, which is a directional light. A directional light has a particular direction and a color, which is again in RGB. So it says color 111. That says it's a white light. It has an intensity of unit equal to 1. And you're allowed to set the directional light on or off. Here it's set to be on. And again, we set that direction to be the x-axis. Directional because the light is along a particular axis. So there's a point light which is uniform over all angles, and directional light where the light rays travel parallel to a particular axis. And that's then defined precisely in this discussion here. Directional light is essentially unchanged in VRML2. There is a new field called ambient intensity added to a directional light. And an ambient intensity just gives you a sort of default lighting. And it's partly in there because VRML doesn't do correct rendering. Because normally if you had a world and there are lots of light sources, light bounces, will hit one object, bounce off, hit another, and wander around. So if you have your favorite 512 SP2 doing graphics rendering, say at the Cornell Graphics Center, then it will, and you use the precise graphics methodology like ray tracing, you would calculate all that ambient light exactly correctly. The trouble is you would spend probably 100 times the compute time that this VRML browser is using to do the rendering. So VRML has some trade-offs. It gives you the ability, it does not do precise rendering because maybe 10 years from now when computers are 100 times more powerful it will, but today it doesn't. It does imprecise rendering and it gives you some extra parameters like ambient intensity which effectively fill in for the precise rendering so you can specify a general lighting. So now after that so that illustrates lighting. Now we're going to skip over a whole bunch of discussion of how the colors were done in that pyramid example because that's changed in VRML2, so I didn't want to discuss it. So this foil here, 71, discusses the texture 2 node, which becomes image texture in VRML2, and it's basically specifying a two-dimensional image which is then placed on top of something or other. And there's a whole set of fields which will tell you how to place the image defined by the texture map on whatever object you want to place it. So the details of the syntax are changed. It is still, I believe, image. For some reason, the x and the y coordinates are called s and t for texture maps. That appears to be a universal feature of graphics. Is how it's done in VRML2. And the main thing the texture node specifies is a file name. You can either specify a file name, or which of course fetches that particular file of the image, or it specifies the actual image as a set of pixels. If you want to have a program that takes a reasonable amount of time to load, I think you'll recommend it to put a file name there, because that will be the fastest thing to do. So we're meant to have an example here. Yes. Well, there's a funny feature of this particular. So these browsers are a little peculiar. I don't know why Kite's doing this. Anyway, this thing here. So this black mark here, which you might think was a mistake, is just because this particular pyramid, it placed an image on it, which image had a number on it, and you're just seeing part of the number. And of course, you can already see a difficulty here, and this is why we need to have some more fields. An image is some square object or rectangular object. A pyramid is not a rectangular object. And so there's a set of commands that tell you how to map the image onto the whatever object you have. So if your object has a square face, it's relatively clear what to do. For this pyramid, it's not so obvious. And so there's some syntax which allow you to take the coordinate system of the image and relate it to the coordinate system of whatever object you have. Alright. So the texture, there's something which used to be called texture coordinate 2 is now texture coordinate, and it defines some reference points which are four corners and a middle point, which here we define to be the with what you'd expect. 0, 0 is the beginning, and the midpoint is 0.5, 0.5. So this defines reference points. Then we meant to be able to use those reference points in a way that is not explained very well here, with a texture. It's not got quite the same name in VRML2, but it's essentially the same concept. You essentially again index your texture map into your object. And so this defines a set of coordinate indices. Well, here we come back to the car. So all that, so I didn't really go through that in very, very satisfactorily. But the only thing to remember is if you have an image, you go and read the VRML manual to see how to map that image onto whatever object you want to display. And there's a very, for each type of object, there's a very, it describes the default, which may or may not be sensible. But even for a sphere, there's a default. I mean, there's a default way to map a rectangle onto a sphere. So VRML tells the browser how it must do it in default, and then with these, by using this text, these later mapping commands, you can change the default, because in general the default is not what you want. All right. So now we come back to our favorite car. I believe this just gives us the car back again. Yes, so here's our car. And I think we've already worked out that we need a headlight. So this was the texture map, I believe. You saw that circle there when you looked at the pyramid. So this texture map is very easy to map to the side of a car, because that's the rectangle. No, it wasn't so easy to map to a pyramid. Alright, so. Alright. So this car has, you can see various features. It has four wheels of different colors. It has a rectangular box as its body. It has a couple of headlights, which look like ice cream cones. And it also has some, it has some advertisements here, and it used to be true that, doesn't seem to be true any longer, but at one stage when you click, maybe this is Miriam. Miriam produced a better version, Miriam Espirlie. When you click on Miriam, those will go to the web page for that particular car company. So that's an example of how you could, well, obviously you can, that links to an HTML page, not to a, to a VRML page. Alright. So now we go back to the this description here. Alright, so the first thing, so you build this car up in pieces, and the first thing you, the first thing that's defined here is a wheel called left front wheel. And that left front wheel is put in a separator. That could be done in the transform node in VRML2, but the separator essentially has the same function. There is a, you take this wheel and you put it where you want it, because obviously you want to lay out this car. Remember, at this stage here, we're always thinking we're in a standard local coordinate system where the origin, our origin is the world's origin. We have above this yet another transformation which will do some rotation to through 30 degrees, but that doesn't matter. So we define the position of the center of this. This is going to be a wheel, which is the sphere. So this transform of minus 2 in the x direction and 2 in the z direction is going to place the center of the sphere at that position. It should be a red wheel because it's got RGB of 100. So this material node, which becomes an appearance node in VRML2, says it's going to be a red wheel. So we couldn't actually reuse the left front wheel because that was in a particular position, but if we can reuse the wheel, except it's not terribly interesting, the wheel is just defined to be a sphere of radius 1. And so that's the end of our definition of a wheel. It's red, it's got radius 1, and it's placed in a particular position. So when we want to find the right front wheel, we can use a different transformation, but instead of writing out that sphere definition again, we can just say use wheel, and it will go and copy that sphere. Of course, that's not much of a saving in this example, but in general, if we had a more interesting wheel, that would be a large saving. So that's a useful thing to do. So spheres being very simple are the same, and everybody agrees on a sphere, unchanged in VRML 1 and 2. Say if you read the definition of a sphere, it will tell you precisely how to map images onto it, if you wanted to do that. And there's only one field in the sphere, which is the radius, which is defaulted to 1. But obviously you can set it to be anything you like. And here's an example of what it tells you. Reads the VRML definition, says when you apply a texture to a sphere, it will cover the entire surface, wrapping it counterclockwise from the back of the sphere. So I don't know what that means. If you're an expert in computer graphics, you can probably work out what that means, or else you can just put a texture map on the sphere and see how it looks. So actually, it's quite useful. The VRML definition, if you wish to, you know, build your own browser, it tells you the information you need to build your browser. It gives a very precise definition of what those commands must do. I mean, it gives you the actual mathematics of all the transformations. So it's very precise. All right. So now we always wanted to build this cone or headlight. And so it's built out of three things: a light, because it's a headlight. It has this front thing, which is here a sphere, and it has the, if you remember rightly, it had this cone. We can have another look at it. So there it is. This is what we're looking here. So we want to now define, so we define, remember this was the left front, right front was the same thing with a different color. So we if you look at the file, it will define those four wheels. Now it defines these two things, which are these headlights. And I say that consists of basically three VRML nodes. And so we are going to be able to reuse that, because if you look at those two headlights, they are identical. They're just placed in different positions. So if we define a headlight, so it is very useful to write def headlight, because the headlight is somewhat non-trivial. So here we're going to gain more than we did from reusing the wheel. All right, so... Alright, so here we're in the coordinate system of the headlight, and the first thing we're going to do is to define the cone, and we're going to, so you'll have to stare at this and see it's right. We do we need to put the axis of the cone in the right direction, and I guess I haven't studied this transform. So this transform presumably is correct. I've not studied it to see it's correct. Yes, while the machine sleeps away, well, maybe... We'll now continue using these notes, you see, in this in our usual multimedia presentation. We go to these notes. Oh, it's come? All right, fine. So it woke up. All right. So probably it went through lots of them, is that right, while it was... It's not. That's the trouble when somebody should do. That's the trouble with this type of system. When it goes asleep, when you click and it doesn't do anything, you're never certain whether it's because you made a mistake and didn't click, or whether the server's gone to sleep. So obviously, this server is half asleep at the moment. So finally, all right, so this is where we ought to have been. I just clicked the next button three times to see if I'd actually clicked it. So, all right, so here we are. So we were defining this cone, we did a transform, then we decided that the cone was going to be red. If you remember, the cone was red, so that's why we give it a color, which is RGB of 100. This material node is going to describe the describe is inside a curly bracket, which is going to be the headlight. Then we have a cone, and with in both VRML and VRML 1 and VRML 2, remember a cone is something which is has a point, and there are two options with a cone. You can either have a bottom or not. You can either have a bottom or not, and in VRML 1, you did that by specifying the so-called part field to either be sides or bottom or something else in some so-called enumerated list. In VRML 2, these enumerated lists have been abolished, and rather you have a set of options which are either true or false. So in VRML 2, you would say... you probably set to be bottom to be false or off. I forget what the syntax is. And you want the side. So we don't want the bottom, because we're going to place the sphere in the bottom, the light. So we want a cone without a bottom, which should say this is the way to do it in VRML 1. and the slightly different syntaxes of the same thing in VRML2. So it has a particular height, which in these units is 0.5, and it has a radius, because it's a long thin cone, of which Alvin, who originally did this, decided it was going to be 0.09. So here's our cone without a bottom, which is red. And you now imagine what this next foil says. The next foil says that there's a separator, because we've now defined the cone. We now want to define a light and a sphere, and so that cone, so we do a particular transformation, and so we have to use this. This computer's asleep. Nothing we can do about it. Yeah, you see? It's asleep. Alright. The right way to do this is not to have a server. You bring it here on your PC and you just display it. Servers are very unsatisfactory. I'm pretty certain this is the wrong way to, the advantage of having a server, of course, is you can update it and bring it up and etc. But I think the only way this is going to work for realistic long-term use is to have everything sitting inside this computer, because the chance of this computer staying up is much higher than the complex set of computers necessary to do with this technology. So we're switching now to these paper foils, and it says, so we define the material of the sphere, which is going to be some so-called emissive color, because we want it to radiate. So we want the sphere to radiate, so we define it to be a yellowish color, so that's red and green of equal amounts. That's a material node with a field called emissive color. The headlight is not going to be a point light. It's going to be a point light. Sorry, it's not going to be a directional light. It's going to be a point light which has a given intensity here of 1, and a color which is almost white. So. And then finally, if we now go to foil 85, we have a sphere which is a radius 0.1, which says it's a tenth the size of our wheel. So at the end of that, we've now defined our headlight built out of three things: a bottomless cone, which is red, a point light, and a sphere. And so that headlight is then used twice using the use syntax. And so the foils that we have then go on and describe the cone node and the point light node. So if we go to foil 95, foil 94, you may remember that car had these various names of the different car manufacturers. And as I thought, these are meant to be anchors so that they actually generated a link to the appropriate site when you clicked on it. So right. So anyway, there's nothing more painful than a broken computer. So, all right. So if you look at that text, you'll find it's built up of a combination of two nodes, a anchor node, which behaves in the way I suggested, so it's meant to go to Ford and GM. Probably it didn't do that because, again, our server was broken. And then it has a so-called ASCII text node, which does what you expect. It just displays text. In VRML2, ASCII text is replaced by text, which has essentially the same capabilities with slightly different definitions of things like the language you use and the fonts and how to whether you center it or not. So, but the capability is similar. Alright, so that allows you to put text. The next thing we're going to go is FOIL 19. You see, it's woken up. So we will go to FOIL 99 now. See, it had a rest. Turns out, it's sort of interesting, actually. This SGI server we run just goes, you know, just every now and then it takes a 10-minute rest. And nobody knows why. It just, the systems people have inspected it. There doesn't seem to be a lot of anything going on. It just stops responding for about 5 to 10 minutes. So maybe that's what was happening. Sometimes, of course, these are other reasons, but it's some timeout or something in the SGI software that causes it to decide it needs to have a rest, but we cannot understand why it does that. It seems to be, it is not when it's busy. So, anyway. Alright, because I know I did the same thing in another. It's done the same thing several times in the past. It's just a feature to keep you awake and make certain you bring your notes with you. Alright, so returning to FOIL 99, this is a pretty interesting node, which is essentially the same in VRML 1.0 and 2.0. So this is a so-called level of detail, or LOD node. So the idea here is that if you've got a world built up of all these wonderful objects, and you have an object which is a long way away, you don't really need to specify an object that's a long way away in the same detail as an object that's near. But if you go and define your beautiful your object with 1,000 polygons, it will take the same time to render 1,000 polygons, whether that 1,000 polygons is a long way away or very near. So the idea of level of detail is that it allows you to specify different representations of an object that are valid at different distances from the viewer, so that you can tell the renderer not to do as much work when it's further away, it's when it's near. So that's the general idea. And there's a field called a range field, and this just specifies essentially values for which it's going to use different representations. So you look at the first value in the range, and if the distance of the object is less than that first value in the range, you use the first definition of the object. If it's between the first and second values, use the second definition of the object, and so on. We, for instance, do this in our terrain renderer, which draws the three-dimensional represents three-dimensional maps, because if you look at a three-dimensional map, that is naturally specified as a set of polygons whose size is determined by the resolution of the data, which is something like 25 meters to 100 meters, depending on the source of the data. And yet, if you're cruising over this land, obviously you care about 25 meter resolution data if you're near a particular point. If you're miles away from that point, you don't need that. So we define average polygons, which are effectively much higher resolution polygons, to use when something's a long way away, and we use the best resolution we have when you're very near. So this essentially allows you to do, so level of detail allows you that. If you're familiar with, say, some of the courses we give on partial differential equations, this is like what's called multi-grid for partial differential equations, where you again have a multi-resolution approach where you use good resolution to solve the differential equation where it needs good resolution, and you have a bunch of coarse grid points where not much is happening. So this allows you to choose the resolution appropriate to the detail you need. So the only they're the same syntax in VRML1 and VRML2, and you have n plus 1 children for n values, because the first child is what happens if you're less than the first range value, the last child is what you use if you're greater than the last value, and in between you use the appropriate child. And this, in VRML1, you just specify them as a set of children. In VRML2, you use a level node, and that's an array, and the elements in that array, which are nodes, those are the representations of the different levels of detail. All right. So that's actually, I don't think there's anything. So that's the end of this discussion. So are there any questions? So that's the end of that. So the purpose of that discussion was to introduce you to VRML using these two examples of the car and the pyramid, and try to show how these illustrate these nodes in the context of those examples. These are these notes which you should have got. Has everybody got these VRML2 notes? All right. So the next lecture we'll discuss VRML2, and these notes here are just the beginning of the VRML2 notes. And we will again skip over some of these foils. They're done in quite some detail. They were done by people working with Zineb Ozdemir and her husband, who were working with Wojtek Szymanski. And I do recommend this on this first page. This resource here is truly excellent. I would consider that very. It has both the we can see if this works. So actually, these are resources which. Well, we won't go. Well, I guess it's here. All right, fine. So this thing here is a very good site. So if we go to this is well, it's pointed to by those resources. I think it may be we should point to this directly from the class page, because this is the SGI site which defines the VRML2 standard. And I would recommend, if you're serious, just as long as CIS is paying for it, I would recommend printing this site off. Otherwise, you can just access it yourself. So if you look at this site, you'll find a bunch of examples of VRML2. It will describe how to use Java and JavaScript to write these scripting nodes. These are the software that will determine the motion. I showed you last time a typical VRML2 with goldfish wagging their fins. So that can be done either, that's actually done by a rather simple technology, but you can do more complicated things by programming it and programming Java and JavaScript actions. This one here called Concepts is very important. It actually describes the essential features of the language and why it's designed as it is. A lot of these notes were taken from that Concepts resource, which is it tells you how to do lighting, what a script is, and stuff like that. And then finally, there is this thing. The other critical thing is the thing called nodes, because that link called nodes, if you go to it, let's see what happens if we go to nodes. Yeah, so if we go to nodes, although you can't see it, of course, because of the font size, I'm sure you will believe me that all the nodes in VRML2 are there, and when you click on that particular node, it will describe the node. So this gives you, just remember we saw this with most of the other web languages, the online resource is extremely good for this language. And so these are defined, this is going to become an ISO standard. So this description is pretty precise. I mean, people have labored, semantic experts have labored as they did with HPF and other languages to make this a very well-defined syntax. And so the other resource here is the local impact resource, which is called the VRML 2.0 resource, which is pointed to from our page. This one is the one we just looked at, the VRML 2.0 specification. Here is the goldfish, which we illustrated. And then this one, you will find here something called the VRML 2.0 online examples. So that's a whole set of examples similar to the car, but I think we illustrated there the pizza. We already did that one. There's a very beautiful JavaScript to VRML 2.0 site. And that actually is a page where you have a lot of simple VRML2 nodes with a JavaScript interface, so that you can actually, from your web page, you can change the parameters of the VRML. So you can change the radius of your sphere or change the actions of mice, whether it rotates it or drags it. So that's a pretty interesting resource. So I would recommend trying to making certain that you can access a VRML2 browser, and we know that they work well on PCs and SGIs. On PCs and SGIs, you can run the so-called Cosmo player, which is SGI's product. And on PCs, you can also run Sony's Community Place. Those are the two I think we recommend. So we believe that our PC cluster, if it doesn't have Cosmo Player, should we we will make certain it has Cosmo Player running. So that's on the first floor of this building. But I believe that whereas Sun is a leader in Java, it is a laggard in VRML, and we do not have good VRML 2 browsers on Sun platform. So the reason being that the Unix leader is SGI, and SGI aimed at the two important markets for SGI, SGI and PCs. PCs, because that's the world's biggest market for anything. There's not much point in having a browser, having a capability that doesn't run on PCs. And then you'll have special, you'll find various, so if one of these things, the car welding, also I showed last time, and so on. So that's that VRML 2.0 resources, which I think is excellent. Alright, so I'll just describe then what these foils go through. So these, you have only got the first 90 in this handout. You will find on the web a total of 170 foils of like this. There's not a lot on each foil, so you can browse through them very quickly if the server is up. There's one more, we hopefully will have on Monday the completion of this foil set, which is the basic VRML 2, and then something which is still being worked on, because it's relatively new technology, which is how to use Java and JavaScript to actually animate VRML 2. Actually, it is quite interesting to notice that the JavaScript, which you remember was sort of a relatively ad hoc language, has been adopted by the community as the first language to be used for programming VRML. So it shows that it seems to be becoming a standard as a fully interpreted scripting language. So these notes are done in roughly the same way as the VRML one. It goes through the basic principles. It describes the differences between 1 and 2. It then goes through some critical notes, giving particular examples. We then do here with routes and sensors, we do the routes and events are the way you do animation. Those are the things that makes a property of one node affect the property of another node. Routes are essentially pointers within the VRML space. Sensors are things that detect user actions like mouse actions. Prototype allows you to build your own VRML type. An is statement is how you actually inherit a property within a prototype. So then we have various, so we do a few examples, transform on the previous foil, scale, material, which was also we saw in VRML1. Animation, which is going to be done with things called interpolators. And then we did inline and anchor. We illustrated those in VRML1. Text, remember, was called ASCII text in VRML1. There are these various lighting things we saw, directional lights and point lights. These numbers here are arbitrary. They just are various concepts we discussed. We'll discuss the thing equivalent to the index face set in VRML2 with texturing and shading as the properties. Level of detail. Sound is present in VRML2. You can have general sound so that you can invoke nice suitable background music or suitably loud bangs and explosions when interesting things happen. You're allowed to have background images, and then the viewpoint, avatars, and navigation info are more browser-specific stuff. So that's the contents of the foils, which are online, which are complete online but not in this handout. And then I say there will be a new set of foils describing Java and JavaScript. So probably that's a good time to stop. And I apologize for the server. But given how many things went wrong, it could have been worse. Interesting. I'm going to have to ask Roman. Usually when it does that, it's nobody knows what went wrong. Sometimes they do, but Todd has stared at it while it's down. And he can't see anything happening. It's just not doing anything. So that's probably the easiest way to do it. Can't find the audio.